Deuteronomy, well, end of Deuteronomy 32, 33, I think. We should be done next week, Lord willing. And then Kyle will start Job in January, since next week's the week before Thanksgiving. Yeah. I mean, it's Christmas and we're gone. We're gone in Texas anyways, so. We took a snow day today. We did Bible this morning in the house. She played outside all morning.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Baby, I'm like, she's only on week 5 of the curriculum. You might just figure out where we get to
school. That's right. Yeah. Yes, so that's the plan. Next week we will meet. It should not take the whole time. And then Kyle will start Job in January. And we'll... I want to say January 2nd, but we'll have it announced in church. But he said first week of January, so. That, well, it's January 3rd. January 2nd is Monday, but whatever, that first Tuesday. So that would be my guess. 3rd or 10th, but my guess is the 3rd. Oh, it's fine. Yeah. All right, and then December 3rd is now the harvest dinner, because our whole church. Well, it's nice, I guess, when we get sick, the whole church just gets sick, and then nobody misses anything. We all got COVID at the same time, so.
We had to take 2 weeks off, and then we had to spend 1 week singing all the songs we missed. Yeah. Remember that? That was cool.
What, because was it December?
People were sad because when we took the COVID off that December,
yeah.
We missed 2 weeks of Christmas songs.
Oh, in January. That's funny. We might have been gone. That's funny. I know. It is sad when you miss Christmas songs. Well, it feels like Christmas, so. That's right. You can celebrate Jesus' birthday all year long. All right. Okay, so we are, well, let me pray. My goodness. Let me pray and we'll get started. Dear Father in heaven, we thank you for your word. We thank you that you are constant God. You are consistent. You are unchanging. The God of Deuteronomy is the same God as today. Lord, you have not changed. It has always been about the heart. You have always wanted people to love you from the heart, but God, we are unable in our natural self to do that. That is why you have to give us a circumcised heart. And we thank you for the Mosaic Covenant that points to the New Covenant, that the purpose of the law is to show the holiness of God and the depravity of man, that this is the standard and there is absolutely no way man can meet it. And that is why we need Christ. That is why we need the New Covenant. So we thank you for your progressive revelation and how you, through the ages, have revealed more and more until Christ. And we thank you that we live in a time when the revelation is complete and we are now looking forward to Christ's second coming, when he will come and rule here and set every wrong right, Lord, and we long for that day. Be with us today as we study the end of 32 and chapter 33 of Deuteronomy. We pray, Lord, for everyone still sick in our church, Rita, and I don't know who else, and also Joyce's recovery and Audrey's recovery. We pray that they would be recovering from their surgeries. We love you, Lord Jesus. Amen.
Question?
Yes.
Is that terrible?
No.
So, off of your prayer, if we're looking for the new circumcised heart.
Yes.
We know that they're Old Testament believers. Individuals.
Yes.
But would their hearts have been considered circumcised by faith?
Individuals, yes.
Even though, of course, Christ said to come, just old believers.
Right. Right.
But
as well, I don't know if this was your question, but corporately their hearts have not been circumcised.
Right.
Okay. Okay, well, when it comes back, when it comes back. That's all right.
That's what happens.
Oh, or when you're pregnant, I feel like this time I cannot keep a thought in my brain. I'll ask Kyle something 2 minutes later, I'll ask again, and then 2 minutes later, I'm like, I know I already asked you twice, but I still have no idea what you said. Oh, I know I do that all the time. All right, so Deuteronomy 32, we went through the whole song 2 weeks ago. And remember, this is a song that Israel is going to remember. Even though they forget the covenant and they forget God, God's not going to allow them to forget this song. And this song is going to convict them. We talked about how verse 4, God is called the rock. This is the first time in Scripture God is called the rock. This is where Paul gets his idea of the rock following them in the wilderness, right? And the rock is Christ. That also speaks to the deity of Christ, because here in Deuteronomy 32, the rock is God, okay? Yahweh himself. Okay, so it's all about God, but Israel is going to fail. We talked about how God is so faithful to them. He has done so much for them, provided for them above and beyond, like an eagle, all these things. He provided so much for them, honey from a rock, even when there's nothing around, God still provides for his people. Verse 15, Israel gets fat because of all God's abundance. And what do? Instead of being obedient and docile and satisfied with what they have, instead they kick, right? They're compared to a donkey that gets fat and kicks. It's like biting the hand who feeds them is the idea, okay? And instead they forsake God, and they go to other gods. So God says, fine, you're going to make me jealous by going serving other gods. I'm going to make you jealous by getting another nation to punish you. Okay? Verse 21, so I will make them jealous with those who are not a people. These are Gentiles. And he takes the not a people, the Gentiles, and he's going to bring judgment on Israel. Okay? But in the end, the nations will get punished. Right? Vengeance is mine. Verse 35 of Deuteronomy 32, God says, right? In due time, their foot will slip. Okay? So the judgments, because the Gentiles, the nations, they're not righteous either. So God has used them to bring justice on Israel, but they need their own punishment, and it will come. Okay? So there is coming a day when Israel will be restored and the nations will be punished. Okay, so this is the song that God has Moses write. It's one of the last things he does, and teaches it to the people. Questions on 32 up to this point? We stopped at verse 43 was our last verse. Okay. Can someone read for me Deuteronomy 32 verses 44 to 52, so the rest of the chapter?
When Moses had finished speaking all these words to all Israel, he said to them, take to your heart all the words with which I am warning you today, which you shall command your sons to observe carefully, even all the words of this law. For it is not an idle word for you, indeed it is your life. And by this word you will prolong your days in the land, which you are about to cross the Jordan to possess. The Lord spoke to Moses that very same day, saying, go up to this mountain of the Mount Nebo, which is in the land of Moab, opposite Jericho, and look at the land of Canaan, which I am giving to the sons of Israel for a possession. Then die on the mountain where you ascend, and be gathered to your people, as Aaron your brother died on Mount Hor, and was gathered to his people. Because you broke faith with me in the midst of the sons of Israel at the waters of Meribah, in the wilderness of Zin, because you did not treat me as holy in the midst of the sons of Israel. For you shall see the land at a distance, but you shall not go there into the land which I am giving the sons of Israel.
Okay, so this is just the conclusion to the song. Okay, verse 44, Moses came, spoke all the words of this song in the hearing of the people. He with the Joshua, the son of Nun. Joshua is there because he is Israel's next leader. Okay, Moses is going to die. He has, I love the end of Deuteronomy. God's like, oh, you're going to die and you're not going in the land. Oh, by the way, you're going to die and you're not going to the land. Oh, did you remember Moses? You're going to die and you're not going into the land. Over and over and over again, okay? So Joshua is going to be the one that takes over. So he's there with Moses, delivering the song to the people, okay? Verse 45, when Moses had finished speaking all these words to all Israel, he said to them, take to your heart, theme of Deuteronomy, heart, it's all about the heart, all the words which I'm warning you today. God wants and expects obedience from the heart. Outward conformity to some rules is not enough. There has to be a heart change, okay? Which I'm warning you today, which you shall command your sons to observe carefully, even all the words of this law, for it is not an idle word for you. Indeed, it is your life. And by this word, you will prolong your days in the land which you are about to cross the Jordan to possess. Okay, this is the only way that they can enjoy long life in the land, meaning probably long life individually, but also long duration corporately, right? Because they last, this is what, 1406, yes, and they get ousted, the north gets ousted in 722, I think, so that's what, 700 years, not even. America's only been around 200 years, so it's a long time, but still, this was their land that God had given them permanently, and they can't keep it because, and see how patient God is. They fail in Judges drastically, and yet God is so patient with them, okay? The law, these are not idle words. This is their life. If they want to show their love for God, this is how they are to do it. Okay, God's words are life itself. Obedience from the heart is the only way to life. Okay, and that has not changed. Obedience from the heart is the only way to life for us as well. If we are truly saved, we love God and we will obey. Okay, doesn't mean we're perfect, okay, but there will be a change in our life. Everything else leads to death and destruction, which makes sense. God made the world the way things are, so he knows how it operates. So if you're going to rebel against the way he said it operates, it's not going to work out so well for you, as we are daily witness to in our country. Okay, the law is not restricting, but it is freeing. We often view the law as a list of do's and don'ts. Okay, that what a burden, right? No. When you live in accordance with how God says to live, you live in accordance with reality. Okay, and it might be hard just because you're going the opposite way of everybody else around you, but it is freeing because it actually correlates with reality, which nothing else does. Every man's made up laws or rules or definition of truth or all the ridiculousness. It's not freeing, it is restricting. Yes, right, exactly. Right, you can never pin it down. Exactly, because it corresponds with reality. Because he made the reality. Yes. Then 48 to 52, God again reminds Moses, right? He's going to go up to Mount Nebo, which is in Transjordan, okay? He can go to the top. He's allowed to look into the land, but he is not allowed to set foot in the land. Okay? And he will die. God tells him he will die after he sees the promised land. And then he gets reminded yet again why he's not allowed in the land. Okay? This was Numbers 20, verses 9 to 13, when Moses strikes the rock instead of speaking to the rock. Okay, and he says, verse 51, Deuteronomy 32, 51, because you broke faith with me. That broke faith is a breach of a relationship of trust. So it's almost like you betrayed me. Okay, it's disloyalty to God. It was an act of rebellion, right? And the idea behind this is even the greatest fall. Okay. Moses basically gets the same punishment that that first generation got. They did not believe God. They would not go into the land. So God says, fine, you want to go back to Egypt? You're going to wander in the wilderness till you die. Okay. Moses, God says, speak to the rock. Moses strikes the rock. God says, that's an act of rebellion, just like the first generation rebelled against me. You rebelled against me. You also cannot go into the land. Now, he lives to basically 30 days before they go into the land because he dies and they mourn for 30 days. Then they go into the land. So Moses lives the longest, but of that first, he is included in that first generation. It says, you broke trust with me, broke faith with me in the midst of the sons of Israel, at the waters of Meribah Kadesh, in the wilderness of Zin, because you did not treat me as holy. Okay? Moses' actions did not show the people God's absolute sovereignty and uniqueness. When God says something, you do it, and you do it God's way. You don't think you have a better way of doing it, even if you're angry. And then that's the thing, is Moses was probably angry. Remember when we did Numbers 20, Miriam had just died at the beginning of the chapter, if you remember it. Okay, Miriam had just died. If you remember, Moses had pleaded on behalf of Miriam when she and Aaron had rebelled against him and she got leprosy. And so, you know, some commentators think that that might have had an effect on him and he was just angry. Okay, well, it doesn't matter how you're feeling on the inside, you still have to obey, which is very hard to do. So because he did not treat God as holy before Israel, he does not get to see the land. All right, he does not get to go into the land, okay? Verse 52, you shall see the land at a distance, but you shall not go there into the land which I am giving to the sons of Israel.
Gosh, it's hard enough even with a circumcised heart to obey.
Yes. Well, right, well, and I would say Moses he had to have a circumcised heart because that's the only way you can have a right relationship with God. But yes, but yes. But he also, he didn't have full revelation either. He was getting this. I mean, this was all brand new. He, like I said, before Moses finished writing through Deuteronomy, they had Job, and that would have been it. And then Moses, in those 40 years, as some wrote Genesis through Deuteronomy. So Joshua would have had the Pentateuch and Job. And that was it. Plus Psalm whatever that Moses wrote. I can't remember. 90, thank you. Right. Right, and he was a leader too.
Right.
And so,
subject to a higher level of
right, judgment. Right, a higher standard. Well, not, I mean, the standard is the same, but a higher accountability. Yeah. You're responsible now for more than just yourself. Yep. Good, questions, Deuteronomy 32.
It's interesting that Mount Nebo, I'm looking through all your maps. Yeah.
Oh.
Yes. And to the east.
Right. Transjordan.
Isn't that famous?
No, that's Mount Ebal.
Ebal is the cursing.
Something happened there.
Nebo. Okay. Yeah, well, Moses dies and is buried there.
He's looking at pretty much the ugliest part of Israel. Too bad he didn't get to see the top part, the pretty part. It could have
been pretty back then. You don't know.
Well, you're right. You're absolutely right.
Well, but if there's rain, because it's desert, it blooms immediately.
Right.
So if it's rain, if there's rain, it's green and just like California. If it rains,
man, it's down there. I was looking all over for it. I knew it was on your trail.
Yeah.
On your Trans-Jordan.
Yeah. Good. Any other question, comments? Deuteronomy 32.
And look at it, then die.
Yep, right.
As if Moses can actually will himself to
die. No, but God is letting him know that this is when he's going to die. Because in Deuteronomy, when we get to Deuteronomy 34 next week, Moses is not, he does not die because he's too old. He's 120.
Right.
Okay, but it's, yeah, he's old. But it says that he is strong and his energy is the same. So it's not like he died of a sickness. God, it was just his time to die. So God is saying, you're going to go up the mountain. I'm going to show you the land. And then that's it. You're done. You're going to die.
And the wording of this.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. 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 Oops. As I drop the mic pack. All right, good. Anything else? Deuteronomy 32. All right, Deuteronomy 33. This is the blessings of Moses. Okay, these are his last words to Israel. So God tells him to sing the song, he write the song that they're not going to forget. He does that. Then he gives a blessing, and this is basically parallel to Genesis 49. This is like a father, a blessing of a father to a son. So Jacob did this when he was dying, right before he died, right? And he blessed all his sons, or cursed, however you want to look at the blessing that he gave them, okay? Because some of them are not good. Moses does the same thing, okay? He is not their biological father, right? He is the tribe of Levi. However, he has been their leader and is like their father. Okay, so he blesses the tribes like a father would. Interesting, in Deuteronomy 33, only 11 tribes are included. A lot of times when 11 tribes are listed, well, no. Oftentimes, Levi is left out because Levi is all over the place, and then Joseph is divided into Ephraim and Manasseh, and so you still have 12. Oftentimes in lists, that's how it works. In Deuteronomy 33, Joseph is Joseph. At the very end of Joseph's blessing, it mentions Ephraim and Manasseh, but they're not split up. And Levi is included, and so there's only 11 because Simeon is left out. How would you feel if you're the tribe of Simeon standing there on the plains of Moab?
The one who went and brought that lady?
Yes. And that is why... That is why we think Simeon is left out, because in Numbers 25, right, is the sin of Peor, right? And if you remember all the way back to Numbers, Balak, the king of Moab, hires Balaam to curse Israel, right? Because he is the God whisperer and he can make gods do whatever he wants, right? Yahweh's like, joke's on you. Okay, and he goes up, and three times he blesses Israel because God will not allow Balaam to curse Israel. So then we find out later on in Numbers 30, I think, that Balaam was like, well, basically I can't get Yahweh to turn against the people. Maybe I can get the people to turn against Yahweh. And so he comes up with the idea of sending in the women. Okay, and it works. And it is a leader of Simeon that parades the woman basically before the tabernacle, right, where Moses and the leaders are mourning for this sin, and it's like an in your face, I'm going to do whatever I want. And that's when Phinehas takes his spear and shish kebabs him, okay? And then Phinehas, as a blessing for that, gets the high priestly line is going to go through him because he's a son of Aaron. So that is why we presume Simeon is not included in this list. It's also interesting, Joshua 19, verse 1. And if you look at inheritance, like how the land is divided up, Simeon's allotment of the land is in the middle of Judah. Judah basically gets southern Israel on the, not the Transjordan side, okay? And in the middle of it, Simeon gets this little portion of land, and basically throughout history, Simeon just disappears. Simeon just gets basically absorbed into Judah, okay? And it's because, and if you remember the censuses in Numbers as well, Simeon like tanks in numbers, right? And it's because of the sin of Peor, because they led the nation in national apostasy. Okay. So, all right. So Moses, God tells him he's about to die. This is Moses' parting words to Israel. Can somebody read for me Deuteronomy 33, 1 to 5?
This is the blessing that Moses, the man of God, gave to Israel before his death. He said, the Lord came from Sinai and appeared to them at Seir. He shone on them from Mount Paran and came with 10,000 holy ones, with lightning from his right hand for them. Indeed, he loves the people. All your holy ones are
in your hand, and they assemble at your feet. Each receives your words. Moses gave us instruction, a possession for the assembly of Jacob. So he became king in Jeshurun when the leaders of the people gathered with the tribes of Israel.
Okay, so this is the introduction. Verse 1 to 5 is going to be introduction. 6 to 25, yes, 25 are the blessings, and then 26 to 29 is like the conclusion. Okay. So verse 1, Moses is called the man of God. This term just refers to a prophet of God, but the idea behind it is he carries the authority of God. Okay. So Moses, again, and it says, bless the sons of Israel before his death. So over and over and over again, we're reminded Moses is about to die. So these are Moses' last words to Israel. One last blessings for the tribe. Verse 2, he said, the Lord Yahweh came from Sinai, dawned on them from Seir, shone forth from Mount Paran. He came from the midst of 10,000 holy ones. At his right hand, there was flashing lightning for them. Okay. The idea is that God descends on Sinai and he journeys forth. Okay. So this is the journey of redemptive history, is the idea behind this. Okay. It starts at Sinai and now it's going to carry on into the future because this is Moses is blessing the nations. So this is almost prophetic in nature. It's going to happen in the future, right? They haven't entered the land yet. Nobody has anything yet. Okay, they haven't crossed the Jordan, they haven't conquered Jericho, they haven't been given land yet. But Moses is going to bless them as if they're already in the land. So this is all future. So God starts at Sinai, and he marched with Israel through the wilderness, and the idea is he's going to continue through redemptive history to be with Israel. Okay. The places listed in verse 2, Sinai, Seir, Paran, these are all places in Israel's journey to Canaan. Okay, and they're all also mentioned in Deuteronomy 1, verses 1 and 2. Okay. When it says he dawned, he shone forth, this is God himself appearing in all his glory, a theophany, the appearance of God. Okay, and when God is on the march, there's no stopping him, right? He came from the midst of 10,000 holy ones. He comes out of heaven. His right hand, there's flashing lightning for them. You're not going to stop God. There's no getting in his way.
A theophany is in Christ?
I don't know. Is the cloud and the fire Christ?
I thought it was the pre-incarnate Christ.
Well, that's pre-incarnate.
Well, right. So, I mean, I don't know. When God himself spoke from Sinai, is that also Christ or was that Yahweh himself? I don't know. I'm not sure. I mean, often when somebody sees someone, like when Joshua sees the angel of the Lord, right, in Joshua 1, and he says, are you for us or against us? That would be Christ.
So I guess in my mind, I always thought theophany was the same as the angel of the Lord. Theophany is a broader term.
Oh, I think so. Maybe not. I thought it just meant an appearance of God. So, I mean, like, because God up the mountain, maybe it is all Christ. I'm not sure. But nobody sees a form. And when Moses asks to see God, right, God hides him in the cleft and covers him with his hand. And he gets to see the backside of his glory only, you know, and that was too much for him. So, yeah.
Back in Exodus, it does have L-O-R-D capital up on Sinai.
Right, but Jesus, I mean, yeah.
Talking to Moses, and the Lord spoke to Moses.
Yeah. The LSB, or the HCSB, yeah.
Right,
yeah. Verse 3, indeed, he loves the people. All your holy ones are in your hand. They follow in your steps. Everyone receives of your words. Okay, so clearly God loves Israel. He has, and Moses has emphasized this over and over again, that God has cared for them above and beyond what he promised or what he needed to do. Okay, and Israel should respond, right? It says they follow in your steps and everyone receives your words. They listen to your words. That's how they're supposed to respond, with heartfelt obedience. Problem is they don't. But that's how they should react to God. Verse 4, Moses...
Wait, can I stop?
Yes.
Verse 2, it's kind of important to note that the use of the word term holy ones in verse 2 refers to the angels, but in verse 3, the use of the word holy ones refers to Israel.
I would guess so. The problem is these verses, there's a lot of translation problems, difficulties to know exactly who it is referring to.
No, my footnote says that. So
oh, okay.
I wrote it in there.
Okay, yeah.
I think when I was reading it, I was like, what?
Right.
And it was helpful.
Yeah. Yeah. So I would think so, but yes. But when I was studying it, they're like, oh, there are all these translation difficulties. I'm like, I am not wading through that. So,
no.
Yeah.
But that just because of the repetition.
Yes,
that,
yes.
That was helpful.
Yes.
To separate them that way.
Yes, yes. Good. Verse 4, Moses charged us with a law, a possession for the assembly of Jacob, and he was king in Jeshurun when the heads of the people were gathered, the tribes of Israel together. Okay, Israel gets the law, and they get the law from Moses, but the law was specifically given to Israel. It is their constitution, okay? The law is to govern every aspect of their lives, okay? I mean, and the law is minute, down to what they wear and what they eat and how they farm and all of it, okay? And this is a gift, all right? It's their possession, like an inheritance almost, okay? And then the lawgiver, verse 5, he is king in Jeshurun. Remember, Jeshurun means upright, and it's another name for Israel. And the irony is that Israel is anything but upright, but that is also another name for Israel. So he is king. He was king in Jeshurun, God. The lawgiver is the king. They get the law. Israel gets the law. Well, so now who's Israel's king? The lawgiver, duh, right? Who makes the laws, who gets to tell you what to do? He is your ruler. Israel was to depend on God and look at him as their king. Okay, when the heads of the people were gathered, the tribes of Israel together, all of them are to look and rely on God. That's why when Israel asked for King Saul, God says to Samuel, they have not rejected you, they have rejected me as king. He is their lawgiver, he is their rightful king. Okay, and throughout the conquest, they are to trust God and view him as their king. Questions, verse 1 through 5. Can someone read for me verses 6 through 25? These are the blessings of the tribes.
May Reuben live and not die, nor his men be few. And this regarding Judah, so he said, hear, O Lord, the voice of Judah, and bring him to his people. With his hands he contended for them, and mayest thou be a help against his adversaries. And of Judah he said, let thy Thummim and thy Urim belong to thy godly man, whom thou didst prove at Massah, with whom thou didst contend at the waters of Meribah, who said of his father and his mother, I did not consider them. And he did not acknowledge his brothers, nor did he regard his own sons. And they observed thy word and kept thy covenant. They shall teach thine ordinances to Jacob, and thy law to Israel. They shall put incense before thee, and whole burnt offerings on thine altar. O Lord, bless his substance, and accept the work of his hands. Shatter the loins of those who rise up against him, and those who hate him, so that they may not rise again. Of Benjamin, he said, may the beloved of the Lord dwell in security by him, who shields him all the day, and he dwells between his shoulders. And of Joseph he said, blessed of the Lord be his land, with the choicest things of heaven, the dew, and from the deep line beneath, and with the choice yield of the sun, and with the choice produce of the month.
Abigail.
And with the best things of the ancient mountains, and with the choice things of the everlasting hills, and with the choice things of the earth in its fullness, and the favor of him who dwelt in the bush, and let it come to the head of Joseph, and to the crown of the head of the one distinguished among his brothers. As the firstborn of his ox, majesty is his, and his horns are the horns of the wild ox. With them he shall push the people all at once to the end of the earth. And those are the 10,000 of Ephraim, and those the thousands of Manasseh. And of Zebulun he said, rejoice, Zebulun, in your going forth, and Issachar in your tents. They shall call peoples to the mountains. They shall, there they shall offer a righteous sacrifices, and they shall draw out the abundance of the seas and the hidden treasures of the sand. And of Gad he said, blessed is the one who enlarges Gad. He lies down as a lion. He tears the arm also of the crown under the head. Then he provided the first part for himself. For there the ruler's portion was preserved. For he came with the leaders of the people. He executed the justice of the Lord and his ordinances with Israel. And Dan, he said, Dan is a lion's whelp that leaps forth from Bashan. And of Naphtali, he said, O Naphtali, satisfied with favor and full of the blessing of the Lord, take possession of the sea and the south. And of Asher, he said, more blessed than sons is Asher. May he be favored by his brothers, and may he dip his foot in oil. Your locks shall be iron and bronze, and according to your days, so shall your leisurely walk be. How far?
25. Yep, that's good. Thank you. Sorry. Okay, so these are the blessings. We start with Reuben, who was the eldest. Okay, may Reuben live and not die, nor his men be few. Okay, if we remember, Reuben had a rough go of it. Okay, so he was stripped of his firstborn rights, right, because he slept with his father's concubine, Genesis 35:22. Okay, in Genesis 35:22, it just says, oh, and by the way, Reuben slept with Bilhah. I think it's Bilhah. And there's no commentary on it. But when you get to Genesis 49, when Jacob's doing the blessings, he comments that it's because of that, because of what Reuben did, that he is stripped of his firstborn rights. Okay? Historically, the tribe of Reuben struggled to survive. Reuben gets the southernmost portion in Transjordan. So in Transjordan, it went Reuben, Gad, Manasseh, like south to north. And this second line here, it says, may Reuben live and not die. And then in the English, it says, nor his men be few. In the Hebrew, it's literally, may his men be a number. Okay? So it's kind of just saying, Reuben, you're going to struggle. And you're, there might be a couple of you, but that's it. Right. Yes.
In Revelation.
Right. Right. Right, but isn't there somebody missing from those 12,000, those tribes in Revelation? There's somebody missing. Because I think Ephraim and Manasseh each get 12, if I think. I don't remember. For some reason, I think there's somebody missing from those, from that list of 12. Yeah, it does. But, sorry, tangent. And I shouldn't speak of what I'm not sure of, so, but for some reason in the back of my head, I feel like somebody is missing from that list, and I can't remember which one it was. Anyway, so Reuben is basically an insignificant tribe, and it all goes back to the sin of the father, okay? Verse 7, Judah. And this regarding Judah, so he said, hear, O Lord, the voice of Judah, and bring him to his people. With his hand he contended for them, and may you be a help against his adversaries. It's interesting. Okay, first of all, this is not birth order. Reuben was the eldest, with Simeon next, and then Levi. Okay? Yeah. So, Simeon is excluded. We already talked about that. But now, after Reuben, the order of blessing roughly follows the allocation of the land south to north. So Judah gets the inheritance in south Canaan proper. Okay, Reuben was south Transjordan. Judah, with Simeon in the middle of it, is south Canaan proper. Okay, and then we're going to go roughly to the north. Okay.
Did you say south to north?
South to north. Okay, so it's not birth order. Okay, and Simeon is totally excluded. He's not mentioned at all. Okay. Judah also, it's interesting to note, there's no, in Genesis 49, the focus is on the scepter, right? The scepter will not depart from Judah. So the kingship and Messiah is going to come from the line of Judah. Okay, none of that is mentioned here in Deuteronomy 33. Okay. Correct. Yes. Yep. Yep. Because then also because that's where David was born. David's from. Yes. Okay. So in Deuteronomy 33, the emphasis of Judah's blessing, which is also very short, it's only one verse. I mean, it's longer than Reuben's blessing, but it's, I mean, Levi gets verses 8 to 11. Judah gets one verse, okay? But the emphasis is on the military power Judah will have, okay? Numbers 2, verse 9 says that the tribe of Judah is to lead the armies of Israel. They'll go out first, okay? And so here the emphasis is on the military power, which if Judah is going to be the kingly line, the king usually is the one that leads the nation into war anyway. Okay, so it fits. But hear, O Lord, the voice of Judah, bring him to his people, like kind of like bring him back safely from war. With his hands he contended for them, and you may help him against his adversaries. Okay, so Judah's going to fight. They're going to fight in battle, but God is going to be the one that helps them. Okay, and Yahweh is going to be the one that determines their success, like always. And that's nothing new. Verse 8 to 11, we get Levi. Levi and Joseph get the longest blessings in this, in Deuteronomy 33. Okay. In Genesis 49, Jacob focuses on Levi's sin. Do you remember Simeon and Levi, what they do in the life of Jacob? Do you remember? Yes. Yes, they're like, oh, you can marry our sister if you all get circumcised, and then they all get circumcised, and then they go and wipe them out, right? So that's what Jacob focuses on in Genesis 49. Here, Moses is focused on Levi's role as priests and Levites, basically, okay? So it's not negative, it's positive, okay? Of Levi, he said, let your Thummim and your Urim belong to your godly men. If we remember, these belong to the high priest. We don't know exactly what they were, but they were some means of determining the will of God. Okay, we think maybe they were stones to be rolled or something that would communicate a yes or a no, and the idea was it would help them determine the will of God. Okay, whom you proved at Massah, with whom you contended at the waters of Meribah. This refers to Exodus 17. 1-7. What's interesting about this passage is this is when Israel complains that there's no water and Moses strikes the rock, but he was supposed to strike the rock. Remember, he does it twice. Once God tells him to strike the rock. The second time, God tells him to speak to the rock. Both times he strikes the rock. Okay, but this is the first time, so Moses doesn't sin here. Okay, what's interesting is in Exodus 17:1-7, there's no mention of the Levites at all. Okay, but here, it seems like maybe the Levites stood with Moses and did the right thing. So when all of Israel is complaining, possibly the Levites were not included in that. Okay? But that they stood with Moses. Verse 9, it says, who said of his father and his mother, I did not consider them, and he did not acknowledge his brothers, nor did he regard his own sons, for they observed your word and kept your covenant. We think that this, all the commentaries said this refers back to Exodus 32 and the golden calf incident. Do you remember that? What the Levites' role in that was? With what?
Aaron
did, but what about the rest of the Levites? That's right. And Moses said, who is with me? And who says they're with him? It's the Levites. And then what does Moses tell the Levites to do? Okay, yeah, well, Moses does that, but what does Moses tell the Levites to do? Do we remember? Let's go. Someone read Exodus 32, 26 to 29. It's only a couple verses.
Did you say 36 to 39?
26 to 29. Exodus 32, so golden calf, 26 to 29. Okay, so the Levites were to go forth and they were to kill anyone that had participated regardless of friendship or relationship, right? And this is what Moses is saying in Deuteronomy 32, who said of his father and his mother, I did not consider them. They were They were involved in sin. And so, I mean, obviously it's not going to be all the Levites, but at least a big chunk of the Levites sided with Moses, and they were willing to stand with God against even their own kin, even their own relations. Okay, so they proved their loyalty to God in Exodus 32. Okay. Verse 10 of Deuteronomy 33, they shall teach your ordinances to Jacob and your law to Israel. This was to be the Levites' job. Okay, so the first half of verse 10 is the general Levites' job, right? And remember, they're going to be scattered in cities all throughout Israel. So the idea is, Levi, you're in different places all throughout Israel, and so you are to then teach the people the word of God. They are to know your law, and Levites, it's your job to teach them. The second half is the priest's job, right, who is a subset of the Levites. They shall put incense before you and whole burnt offerings on your altar. So the Levites had two main responsibilities. Priests to facilitate the worship system, and the general Levites, not descendants of Aaron, to teach the law so the people would know the law throughout Israel. Okay, so the Levites had a very important job. Okay, then verse 11, O Lord, bless his substance except the work of his hand. So Moses is asking God to bless the tribe of Levi and all that he does. Shatter the loins of those who rise up against him and those who hate him so that they will not rise again. Okay, so protect him from his enemies. Right, Levi is also going to help in the conquest. They don't get exempt from fighting. Okay, and Moses is asking that God protects them. Verse 12, Benjamin. Of Benjamin, he said, may the beloved of the Lord dwell in security by him who shields him all the day and who dwells between his shoulders. Okay, beloved, if you remember, Benjamin was very special to his father Jacob. Yes, right? Because, I mean, Rachel died giving birth to Benjamin, and after Joseph dies, quote-unquote dies, right? Jacob thinks he dies. Benjamin is his only one left, right? And it is through Benjamin that Joseph realizes his brothers have changed, okay, and have repented, because he's like, isn't there another one? You know, whatever. And they're like, oh, we can't bring Benjamin. That would kill our father. And so Joseph can see that the brothers have had a change of heart, and they're not jealous of Benjamin like they were of Joseph. Okay, so this beloved of the Lord, it says he has a special place in Yahweh's heart as well. Okay, Benjamin can rest securely because Yahweh shields him from all threats, right? Who shields him all the day and he dwells between his shoulders. Between his shoulders, it's like right here, right? Close to your breast or your bosom, very intimate with God. God is going to protect Benjamin. Oh, man. But isn't it the tribe of Benjamin that almost gets wiped out in Judges? So.
Isn't the tribe of Benjamin, or leader of Benjamin, that cuts off the one?
It's from the tribe of, was it? No.
There's some woman who gets up and cuts up in 12 pieces.
Yes, the concubine. I don't know if it's I think it's. Yeah, I can't remember here. That's end of Judges. So the men that raped the concubine were of Benjamin, and then the man cuts him up and sends her to all the tribes, and then they all fight against Benjamin, almost wipe him out, say nobody can marry him,
right.
And then they're worried that the tribe of Benjamin's going to be totally wiped out because now they can't marry anyone, and so then that's when Benjamin gets to go and steal the ladies from the festival. Yeah, it's a mess. It gets a mess.
And it's the very last thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wise,
yep. Yep. Yes.
Like Paul / Saul come from
Benjamin?
That's what I've heard. I've never done really.
Paul.
Paul
I don't know.
Benjamin.
The King Saul was a
King Saul
Benjamin.
Right.
I don't know about Paul.
In my other Bible,
okay.
Like the New Testament.
Okay.
He might,
I don't know. I don't know.
I didn't do any research.
Yeah. All right, back to Deuteronomy 33. Joseph is next, verse 13 to 17. Okay, the emphasis here is on how Joseph is going to prosper and the land is just going to produce for him. Blessed of the Lord be this land, choice things of heaven with the dew from the deep lying beneath, and with the choice yield of the sun, with the choice produce of the months, with the best things of the ancient mountains, the choice things of the everlasting hills, with the choice things of the earth in its fullness, and the favor of him who dwelt in the bush. Okay, basically the idea is all of nature, is all of creation is going to cooperate together and just abundantly produce for Joseph. Joseph gets the vast amount of land, okay, because half of Manasseh inherits Transjordan. The other half of Manasseh and Ephraim inherit in Canaan proper. And so you add the three of those portions together and it is a big chunk, and they inherit in the middle. In Hebrew, it's called the Shephelah. It's the middle of Israel, like just west of the Jordan. Judah's in the south and then they're like in the middle. Okay. And so the idea is they're just going to materially prosper because all of creation is going to cooperate to produce for them. Okay. Verse 16, when it says the favor of him who dwelt in the bush, that's a reference back to Exodus 3 when God speaks to Moses from the burning bush. Verse 17, then turn. So verse 13 to 16 basically emphasizes all the stuff that Joseph's going to get. Okay. Then at end of 16, then let it come to the head of Joseph and to the crown of the head of the one distinguished among his brothers. Okay, Joseph basically gets the rights of firstborn after Reuben. Okay. And then verse 17, it turns to his military might. As the firstborn of his ox, majesty is his, and his horns are the horns of the wild ox. Horns in the Bible is always a symbol of strength. With them he will push the peoples and all at once to the ends of the earth. And those are the 10,000s of Ephraim, and those are the thousands of Manasseh. Okay, so at the very end, we're referred back to Ephraim and Manasseh, the two sons of Joseph. And if you remember, because God likes to mix things up, who's the oldest?
Who's the oldest?
Yes, of Ephraim and Manasseh. Do you remember? Yes, it's Manasseh. Okay, and if you remember when Jacob blesses them, he crosses his arms. Right, so his right hand is on Ephraim and his left hand on Manasseh. And Joseph's like, no, 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 don't do that. Like, this is, you know, Manasseh's the oldest, and Jacob says no. Jacob himself is not the oldest, right? Joseph is not the oldest, so Ephraim gets the bigger blessing. And if you see, Ephraim has the 10,000s and Manasseh only the thousands. Okay, but they will be mighty in war and have military strength. Right, well, so is Ephraim.
Isn't part of Ephraim along with Judah?
Does it? I thought basically it was just Judah. I don't remember.
Judah and a little something and a little something.
Well, Simeon is included down there with Judah because their inheritance is in the middle of it, but...
No, in the references I'm vaguely thinking of, Simeon's not even mentioned.
Okay, right, yeah, no.
But when they divide.
Right.
Something says partly Ephraim will have to.
Yeah, I don't know. Verse 18 and 19. This is Zebulun and Issachar together. Of Zebulun he said, rejoice, Zebulun, in your going forth, and Issachar in your tents. That idea is basically in your going out and you're coming in. Zebulun in your going forth, Issachar in your tents. Okay, so the idea is they're going to be blessed in everything they do. If they're out and about or if they're at home, they're going to be blessed. They will call peoples to the mountain. They will offer righteous sacrifices. They will draw up the abundance of the seas and the hidden treasures of the sand. Okay, the idea here is they are going to encourage Israel to worship where they are supposed to worship, at the proper location. Okay, Jerusalem is not set up as the proper place until David. Yes, so before that, it's in different locations, wherever the tabernacle is, okay? And then they will be blessed by the seas. It could refer to the Sea of Galilee, Okay. Verse 20 and 21, Gad. Of Gad he said, blessed is the one who enlarges Gad. He lies down as a lion and tears the arm, also the crown off of the head. Then he provided the first part for himself, for there the ruler's portion was reserved. And he came with the leaders of the people, and he executed the justice of the Lord and his ordinances with Israel. If you remember, Gad inherits Transjordan, just north of Reuben. Okay, there are different extra biblical sources that will refer to Gad only and not to Reuben, like referring to that whole section. And so they think that possibly Gad took over most of Reuben's land as well. Okay, but he gets the first portion, the first part, because he's already inherited before they cross over. Okay, but as part of the agreement to inherit Transjordan, they have to cross over Jordan River to help conquer, and Gad is going to be a mighty force. Right? He comes with the leaders of the people. He executes justice of the Lord, driving out the Canaanites. Okay. Verse 22, Dan says this is a lion's whelp. He leaps forth from Bashan. Okay, the idea behind lion's cub, he's timid and young, but he has great potential. What's interesting is Bashan is located in North Transjordan. Dan inherits a little piece of land in like middle of Israel, okay? But they can't drive out the Canaanites, so they say, forget this, and they go way north, like north of the Sea of Galilee. So this might there might be a little bit of prophecy here saying Israel's Dan's going to get a piece of land down in the center of Israel, but they're going to end up way north in Bashan, north of the Sea of Galilee.
So they actually moved their location?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes, you can go to Dan today, and Dan is north of Galilee. Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, and what you go visit is a altar to Pan, the god,
today,
the god.
I was not aware. So the tribes still have separate areas today?
No, no. It's called Dan. The city is called Dan. It's not.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
And was it in the same area?
Yes, where Dan inherited. Well, where Dan moved. Yes. Yes.
But not all the tribes have current.
No, they don't. No. They.
Obviously, some cities have survived.
When you go
yes.
there and you take the regular tour, they will tell you this was where the tribe
oh, sure.
Yeah. 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 All right, verse 23, Naphtali. If Naphtali says, O Naphtali, satisfied with favor and full of the blessing of the Lord, take possession of the sea. And the south. Naphtali inherited the west bank of the Sea of Galilee. This is where Jesus spent a lot of his ministry, was in Naphtali. Okay. So he gets God's favor and blessing. Okay. And it says, take possession of the sea and the south. So he might have spread south and west from his territory. His original territory was the west bank of the Sea of Galilee, and obviously more than just the coast, but that would be probably the sea that it's referring to, not the Mediterranean Sea, but the Sea of Galilee. Okay.
So I'm sorry, you said it moved?
He might have spread out a little bit from what he's a
bigger,
yes.
Still have that because
yes.
Jesus
and Jesus, that yes, and that's where Jesus spent a lot of his ministry. Yes, in Naphtali. 24 and 25 of Asher, he said, more blessed than sons is Asher. Asher, his name means happy and blessed. That's what Asher means. Okay, so it's kind of a play on his name. So he's more blessed because that's even his name is blessed. Okay, and happy. May he be favored by his brothers, and may he dip his foot in oil. So he will gain favor with his brother tribes. Foot in oil, the idea behind that is abundant prosperity. You have so much oil, you can even bathe your feet in it. It's the idea, okay? Your locks will be iron and bronze, and according to your days, so will your leisurely walk be. Iron and bronze were the strongest metals, and they would use them to padlock their city gates, okay? So it's like, now obviously not everyone in their territory would have lived in a gate, but it's as if they're as secure as possibly can be, because God is the one that is making them secure. Okay, because Yahweh protects them. Questions on the blessings? Okay. Can someone read for me verses, the rest of the chapter, 26 to 29? Okay, so this is the conclusion, and it ties back into the introduction, verses 1 to 5. Okay, again, Israel is called Jeshurun. Okay, and it starts with the incomparability of God. There is none like the God of Jeshurun. No one is comparable to Yahweh. Okay, and the emphasis, beginning and ending, it's all about God. You know, Israel gets their blessing, but they're to point everybody to God. It's all about God. Okay. Yahweh rides the heavens, who rides the heavens to your help, and he helps Israel through the skies in his majesty. The idea here is that he controls all the elements of nature. Right, the sun god Ra was supposed to, you know, ride through the heavens, right? But he only had control over a little bit. Well, this Yahweh God, he controls it all. He rides the heavens, helps, and through the skies in his majesty. Okay. Verse 27, he is eternal and everlasting. The only God that is eternal and everlasting. The eternal God is a dwelling place, and underneath are the everlasting arms. The idea here is he is holding Israel, and they are safe and secure because one God is eternal and is holding them in his arms. He drove out the enemy from before you and said, destroy. Okay, God is the one that fights their battles, and he takes care of their enemies because of this. Verse 28, so, because, right? God is eternal, strong. He's the one that takes care of your enemies. Therefore, verse 28, Israel dwells in security. Okay, this is the only reason Israel cannot all be safe. Has nothing to do with Israel, has everything to do with God. The fountain of Jacob is secluded, right? They are safe. Their water is safe. In the land of grain and new wine, his heaven has also dropped down dew. This is all language of blessing, right? Grain, wine, dew, they need the water. Fountain, they provide the water. It's secure. Why? Because of God and his strength. Verse 29, blessed are you, O Israel. Who is like you, a people saved by the Lord, who is the shield of your help and the sword of your majesty? So your enemies will cringe before you, and you will tread upon their high places. Right? So there's no one like God, and there's no one like Israel. There's no nation like Israel. And Israel is only special because there's no one like God, and he chose them. Right? So Israel, that has nothing to do with Israel itself and has everything to do with God. But Israel can be powerful and special and set apart, but only because their God is powerful and special and set apart. Okay? Because they are saved by the Lord, and it is Yahweh who is the shield of their help, right? And the sword of your majesty, right? God is their protection. He is their offensive weapon. He plays offense and defense, all of it, and it's all because of God's, because of God. Okay, so no one is like Israel, but only because no one is like Israel's God. There's no other God like Israel's God. So again, the focus is on God and who he is. Questions, Deuteronomy 33. All right, and we will finish Deuteronomy next week.